We've talked about DeAndre Ayton. We've talked about Devin Booker. The other big question in the aftermath of the Suns' loss in Game 7 is what they want to do with Cam Johnson, who is extension eligible, who is entering his prime. It's going to be one of the big questions looming over this entire offseason. We'll talk about it on today's episode of Locked On Suns.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past five seasons and a contributor at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen today and every day. A really big shout out to everybody who has continued to watch and listen even after what happened in Game 7. I really do appreciate it. There is a ton going on with this team, not just because of the loss, but this was going to be a big offseason either way. So it's very exciting that you guys are still along for the ride. And for those of you who are maybe just finding the show, wondering about all this stuff, hit subscribe, hit follow on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. And if you are seeing the show on YouTube, just hit that subscribe button right down below. That's the best way to support the show. And then leave me a comment telling me what you are looking at regarding this Suns offseason and Cam Johnson specifically. And I will get to as many of those down below in the comments as I possibly can. But that's what we're here to talk about today. First and foremost is Cam Johnson. We'll have a special guest at the end of the show as well to give a dispatch from Footprint Center for Game 7. I was obviously there, but from the stands, from the crowd as all of this fell apart before our very eyes. But let's leave that until the end because I do think it'll be fun to dig back into a little bit. But the main attraction, Cam Johnson, he is eligible for a rookie scale contract extension. He is coming off, obviously, of the deal that he signed when he was drafted back in 2019, the night that the Suns made a sign-in trade, moving back from 6 to 11, getting Dario Saric and drafting Cam Johnson there at number 11. He's eligible for the extension through the end of October. Like last year with Mikhail, DeAndre, and Landry Shamet, it's only obviously going to be negotiable between the Suns and Cameron Johnson. He's not a free agent. He just is eligible to be extended, which means that next season is still going to be part of this current contract that he signed when he was drafted. And this extension would then go into effect in 2023 for the season after next. Cam will be, this is kind of the interesting part here in terms of just the bare bones details, is Cam Johnson will actually be 27 and a half when the first season of this contract kicks in, of this extension kicks in, if he does sign it. And it will take him through his age 31 season. So that's what happens when you are, when you're drafted and you're already, you know, in your early to mid-20s, basically. You know, this is basically the same exact age frame. So just for reference, obviously Booker, who we talked about on Friday's show with Aaron Edwards, Devin Booker's Supermax extension is going to kick in two seasons from now rather than next season. So it's not quite the same apples to apples thing. But if you just think that will be Booker's third contract and it will basically take him from age 27 to age 31. This is Cam's second contract, and it will take him from 27 to 31. So, you know, the difference between drafting somebody like Booker, who was 19, and drafting somebody like Cam, who was, you know, 3-4 years older than that, is pretty noticeable once you start to get into the contract stuff with those players. So, the other factors here, and then I do want to get into comparisons, and then I'm going to give you some sort of early thoughts, predictions on what might happen. But the other sort of detail stuff here, so you've heard Cam Johnson, Kevin Arnovitz at ESPN, he just went on Zach Lowe's podcast the day after the Suns lost Game 7, and he was talking a lot about how the Suns were pretty infatuated with Cam Johnson, it seems, like just proud of the fact that they drafted and developed him, the fact that he has played so well already for them. And I mean, just myself being around this guy for the entirety of his career, 2019 was when I really sort of sunk my teeth into this stuff, covering the team day to day. And I think that they really see Cam as a shining example of, you know, their player development program, but I think even more so than that, their culture and the sort of work ethic, the buy-in, the sacrifice, the camaraderie, all the stuff that they want their culture to be. I think that they see that in Cam. I think in Mikal Bridges too, maybe first and foremost Mikal Bridges and Devin Booker, but just behind them, or maybe even lockstep with them, is Cam Johnson. Like, I really think that they see Cam as one of the key components of what they're building here. And I think that extending him is going to be a priority. And I think committing to him in that way, even more so than just the money or the, you know, whatever the publicity of that might bring them, I also think it's like the commitment to him, the statement to Cam himself of like, you did everything we could have asked of you. We see you as part of our future. And here is this financial commitment to back that up, basically. But the other detail here that I don't want to wait any longer to get out there, because I haven't seen it talked about nearly enough in how fans are thinking about Cam and even like the reporting or any of it. It just doesn't get talked about. Last fall, between when the Suns lost the finals and when the next season started, which it was a lot of like Booker Olympics talk, it was a lot of extensions for Cam and, I'm sorry, for Mikal and DA and everything else, it kind of got lost. But it was like mid-September or so that Cam Johnson actually switched agents. And that in and of itself would be somewhat interesting. He went to CAA from a very small agency that he began his career with, which was SAS. He was represented by Seth Cohen, who really, that agency has not had a lot of other big-time NBA players. And I think that they got Cam because he wasn't expected to be a big-time NBA player at first. You know, he was a maybe first-round pick, and now he's become a core role player for a title contender. And so he sort of, you know, made the upgrade of going to a big-time agency to sort of, you know, stick along with his elevation into a big-time player. But what got lost even more than that is that one of Cam Johnson's agents now is Devin Booker's dad, okay? So Melvin Booker, Devin Booker's father, is one of the men representing Cam Johnson. That's a big thing when you're thinking about if somebody's going to get extended, what they mean to a franchise, what they, you know, where they stand with the key players, and I don't literally mean players like athletes, but decision makers in this organization. The fact that he is represented by the family of the most important, maybe the single most important person in the entire organization outside of the owner, is very noteworthy. Okay, so just keep that in mind. The Suns love this guy. He is represented by their best player's dad, and he's obviously a very good player. So with that all said, I want to get into some comps really quickly as well. And I'll go fairly quickly through this because I think my prediction part will sort of go into where I see it landing, but here's three comps. The first one is Mikal Bridges, and that's on the high end, but I want to get that out of the way first. $90 million guaranteed over 4 years, signed it in 2021. He had 15.7 win shares at the time of signing that deal. I think that just for the sake of sort of the hierarchy of this team and also the production level, you can't give Mikal Bridges a $90 million contract for having done everything he did and being so effective and productive and core to everything the Suns want to be, and then give this guy more than that when he hasn't done as much, when he's not as important of a component of the team. So that's the high end. I don't think that this contract extension for Cam Johnson will exceed that. Going down one step from there, Duncan Robinson, who is obviously a Miami Heat player who is kind of out of their rotation right now, which is its own story, but at the time he signed the deal, which was in 2021, also $80 million guaranteed over 4 seasons, so $20 million per year. And he was actually only at 9.2 win shares when he signed it. He had basically only had 2 seasons of big-time production at that time, the bubble season and then the next one. One step below that, Joe Harris, $72.5 million guaranteed over 4 years. I think there's actually some bonuses and whatnot to get it to $75 in total over 4 years. He signed that in 2020, right after the bubble. The Brooklyn Nets were not even really themselves yet because Kevin Durant had not come back, but he has come back now, and they knew that, and they wanted to have a shooter like that in place. He had 14.6 win share, so just a little bit below McHale, but he had been in the league for a while. He was a second-round guy, and so their contracts get a little bit weird, but this was his first big payday. He was already almost 30, if not already 30 years old when he signed that contract. So not a perfect comparison. He's a little bit on the older end and had been in the league for a little bit longer, but that one, 14.6 win share. So Cam Johnson right now has 10.9 win shares, which is a little bit on the lower end, closer to Duncan Robinson than to Bridges or Harris, but he's also older, like Robinson and like Harris were, rather than McHale, who was also getting paid for a little bit of what he could be and the fact that he was not even in his prime yet. That's not really the case with Cam. So with all of that stuff said, I want to get into a little bit of what I expect to happen over the course of the summer and where I think this is all headed. First though, guys, today's show brought to you by Sakara, which is pretty awesome, frankly. Feeling your best starts with what you eat. Sakara helps you live a healthy, balanced lifestyle and truly enjoy it with delicious, plant-rich, transformational nutrition that builds a foundation for living in your best body. Again, they are taking meal services that you know and love, but they're making it healthy. And a lot of the time, the other ones are not, and they're definitely not plant-based. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. Sakara gives you the tools you need to transform your life with their organic, ready-to-eat meal delivery program and functional wellness essentials. Their nutritionally designed, chef-crafted breakfasts, lunches, and dinners are made with powerful plant-rich ingredients, helping boost your energy, support your digestion, curb your sugar cravings, and get your skin glowing. Plus, it's all delivered right to your door, ready to eat. Sakara's functional, plant-rich wellness essentials help you create a body you love living in. From their best-selling metabolism superpower to the powder to the foundation, their daily supplement pack, Sakara's products are designed to help support your wellness goals anytime, anywhere. And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to sakara.com/lockedon20 or enter code lockedon20 at checkout. That's Sakara, sakara.com/lockedon20. To get 20% off your first order, sakara.com/lockedon20. All right, got comps out of the way. I reminded everybody that Devin Booker's dad is McCam Johnson's agent, and then the nitty-gritty stuff in terms of the timing and all that. Let's get into what might actually happen. So I think first and foremost, the Suns will wait to get this fully done. So maybe I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but I still think the basics are the same. They might wait to extend, but that won't change what they're allowed to offer him. That won't change any of those comps. That won't change really anything. So I think this extension sort of operates outside of a lot of the other stuff that they're doing, except for, of course, trades. It's great to have the flexibility throughout the summer, right? If you can trade Cam Johnson and then allow his next team to negotiate his next contract, I think that's going to help, you know, it's going to help all parties. He'll want to know if he's going to still be on this team before he starts any negotiations, of course. And, you know, the other team will want to be able to lock him to a contract that they want rather than whatever the Suns happen to negotiate. So I think this will be on the back burner for a little bit. Also, if any mate like big deal comes along, Cam is really the only young cost, you know, unextended player that the Suns have. Everybody else is kind of already on that next contract, whether that's Ayton, who's about to be, or Bridges, who already is. Cam is really the only guy who's not like that. Plus, he's really one of the only Suns players who you expect to continue to get better and who's already like a desirable player. There's a lot of, you know, Chris Pauls, Jay Crowders, or Devin Bookers who are, you know, locked in and either not going to be traded or already, you know, on the tail end of their career, whereas Cam is right in the middle. So maintaining the flexibility with him, I think, will be good. I want to give a little bit more of sort of like what this would mean and some of the things that the Suns will be thinking about. Okay, so the decision to extend Cam, if we assume that that's sort of their plan A, I think the one of the basic things about this is it would set the Suns up to be a much more offensive-centric team than they have been the past 2 years. Because if you're sort of thinking all along when Jay Crowder signed his contract in 2020 with the Suns, they knew that his deal would expire right as Cam Johnson's extension kicked in. So I think there was always going to be that sort of passing of the torch. And but, you know, what that means though, especially with Cam, probably, you know, if we're all being realistic, I think his defensive ceiling is probably to be above average, but not very great, not a massive difference maker. I think you're looking at a player who can use his size and, you know, mobility and athleticism to the extent that he has it, which for his size, I think he has it. He can be in the right spots. He can rotate. He can, you know, get in the way, but he's probably not going to be somebody locked down, somebody stopping opposing scorers. You're not going to say, okay, we're playing, you know, Luka Doncic in the playoffs, or we're playing, you know, Giannis in the finals, let's put Cam on him. That's probably not going to happen. So that's a pretty big difference from what you've had with Jay Crowder. So I think at its core, that's something that you look forward to. If you're deciding to extend Cam, then you're thinking, okay, you know, does that affect the way that we want to have our bench built out? Does that affect the way that we eventually want to replace Chris Paul? You know, you're gearing a little bit more on the wing toward offense. And that matters. The other thing is you're making the starting lineup, or just sort of the overall core of the team, way more expensive. Like, I think that's not dawning on people right now quite enough. So if you just think, imagine a world where the Suns keep Ayton, and then they obviously keep Chris Paul, they obviously keep Devin Booker. Let's just say, in a world where most of everything else stays the same, which in the NBA is difficult to bet on, but let's just say it, then the 2023 opening night starting lineup, so not this upcoming season, but the next one, all five Suns starters between Paul, Booker, Bridges, and Ayton, and Johnson would be making $15+ million. And probably whoever the Suns get to replace Chris Paul, if they replaced him, would also be making that much, because if you're trading Paul, you're going to be getting a pretty good player, a pretty expensive player back. So I think that's pretty safe to assume that if they keep Johnson and they keep Ayton, that all five guys will be making $15+ million. Nobody else in the NBA has that right now. The Hawks are kind of close, but it's hard to know what their whole team will look like. Gallinari and everybody else, John Collins, they have a very influx situation. There's a potential that they could start a lineup next season that would have that, but nobody else either did it this past season or looks like they're going to do it next season. The Bulls were somewhat close. The Warriors have 4 out of 5 guys making $15+ million. The Jazz have like 3 or 4, I think 4 between Conley, Mitchell, Gobert, and Bogdanovich, and then you have Jordan Clarkson, who's at like 13, but he's not a starter, but that's pretty close. But nobody in the NBA had that this past season, and no one else really figures to have it based on like the extensions that are coming or any of that stuff, unless the Warriors, you know, combine a bunch of guys and go all in on a trade this summer or something, which doesn't seem likely. So that's a rare, rare thing to have 5 players all making that much money. I think it's one of those things where it's easy for us to sort of be like, spend the money, do whatever. But it's like when you really start to put into perspective, like, whether it should be a no-brainer to just spend whatever it takes if you own a sports team to make it a good sports team, I'm totally sympathetic to that line of thinking. But if you're sort of expecting or asking the Suns to do something that's genuinely unprecedented in the whole NBA, I think you probably have to start to second-guess yourself a little bit. Is like, is this a realistic thing to think will happen? And at least to me, that does make me think, okay, you know, if they do extend Cam, if they do keep Ayton, that's going to affect the calculus of how they go about things going forward. It's going to affect how they want to replace Chris Paul. It's going to affect how they build out the bench. It's going to affect a lot of things. Even just their ability to build out a great bench will be hampered once you're in that luxury tax area. So just to keep that all in mind. But I do think at the end of the day, because they do still have flexibility and things that they can do to clear players off of the books, to consolidate a few players into one player, things like that, I do still think they will get an extension done with Cam Johnson, make that commitment to him, move forward with that new look sort of team down the line. And I think that the deal will look a lot like Joe Harris. I think that that, even more so than, we didn't have a lot of great comparisons for Mikal Bridges last year, and so that was what made it a little tough, and he didn't really get the same exact contract as anyone else. It was kind of right down the middle between your OG Anunobis and your Jaylen Browns. It was kind of splitting the difference. I think the Harris, like, that could just be almost exactly what we see for Mikal, which is, you know, just a tad above $18 million per year, and that puts him significantly below where Mikal Bridges is, but also a pretty big commitment to him. His age is a little bit younger than where Harris was, so maybe you could see it be a little higher than what Harris got, but also I think the Suns have treated extensions as, like, you're getting the security, but you're also going to get a little bit below market value. You're choosing not to reach free agency, so maybe you're not going to get exactly the height of the deal you could have gotten in free agency, but I think Cam will probably appreciate the comfort and the role and the chemistry, the continuity stuff too. And so I think you will probably see it be right around that 18 a year, right around what Harris got. And then from there, it's just a matter of how can you fit everything else in? What does the luxury tax look like? How do you build a team the right way? And that's going to be really interesting. But again, I do think that this stuff sort of operates outside of, unless they're putting a bunch of stuff together to go get a really star-level player where Cam is going to be in a trade that also includes Jay Crowder, also includes Landry Shamet, also includes Dario Saric or some grouping of those guys, I think most of what they might do this offseason will happen. And then the Cam Johnson thing will just be this October announcement that comes. I don't think, unless they really see an awesome opportunity, that they're going to want to trade Cam Johnson. And I don't think that either side is going to rush the extension. Most teams don't do extensions early unless it's superstar level players who are just getting maxed out without a doubt, like Devin Booker did. And like we saw, you know, Trae Young, Luka Doncic, et cetera, in recent seasons. So that's how I see all of that going, and I think it's a big win. I think getting and developing and keeping a player like Cam Johnson is a massive victory for a franchise. It's so difficult to do that, as we saw during the entire rebuild. You know, how many lottery picks came and went that never even seemed likely to get extended, let alone actually did it. So it's very promising. It's good stuff. It's one of the positives heading into this offseason as I see it. I know the luxury tax stuff gets a little scary, but think of it as a win. The Suns are getting to keep a player that they grew, homegrown, and who's a really great fit with what they want to do culturally and how they play. All right, closing things out with a friend of mine, Jennifer DeLorme, coming on the show to talk about, she's a Suns season ticket holder. What did it look like in there in Game 7, and how does she see this? Because I try not to let the Valley resident, the Suns homer fan part of me show up in my analysis too much, but doesn't mean it's not important. It doesn't mean it's not a very relevant part of how all this might be thought about by the franchise. So that is what we will talk about. We might play some Suns staying or leaving. We'll see how it goes. First, though, guys, today's show also brought to you by Bet Online. BetOnline.net has you covered all year long throughout the entire sports calendar. Baseball, regular season, you have, the Champions League final in a couple of weeks, next weekend, actually. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm losing track. In European soccer, you have, what else is going on? The basketball playoffs, let's see. What are the championship odds right now? I think the Celtics should be the overwhelming favorites, but I believe the Warriors are still right there because they're beating up on the Mavericks right now. Yeah, the Warriors are -130 to win the championship. I know the Celtics lost game 3, but I still think they're the better team. I still think they will win that series. I could see them winning games 4, 5, and 6, and I wouldn't even be that surprised. They're +325. They're basically neck and neck with Miami, but that's pretty good money to me. Celtics to win the championship at +325. Bet Online. Constantly updating. They have podcasts, they have articles, they have news, analysis, all of it to get you the info you need to make bets smarter. So head to the website today. Again, that's betonline.net, or use your mobile device to learn more about the latest trends and action. Bet Online, where the game starts. coming back here, trying something a little bit different with this last segment. My friend Jennifer Delorme, who I feel like, Jennifer, how long have we been talking about the Suns together? Like 10 years almost?
Our entire friendship, which yeah. I think is 10, 11 years.
Yeah, we met when the Suns highlight of the season was like signing Hedo Turkoglu or something like that. And
we've been through a lot.
We have been through a lot. So you are also a Suns season ticket holder, and mm-hmm. we texted somewhat through game 7, and then I think it kind of went dark at a certain point and maybe picked back up Monday morning, which yeah. is totally understandable. But I wanted to bring you on, one, to give us a dispatch from in the arena, a little bit to kind of close the book on the regular season, and then we'll play Staying or Leaving, which I might just throw at every guest for a couple weeks just because I think it's kind of fun. But so this, after last season, you decided to take the plunge, buy tickets, go to every game. What was it like being there after every spectacular moment for months on end to be there watching in person as it kind of fell apart a little bit? And for the audience, we're not going to be doom and gloom the whole time, but I do think this is interesting. So share your, what was your experience as it all fell apart?
It was really surreal. It's interesting because on the way to the game, I didn't feel excited. I was like nervous and kind of grumpy about it. And I felt bad because like going into the arena, people were like, you know, it was like a party. It was like a game 7. It was a big deal. And I kept trying to tell myself like game 7, this is like what you live for, right? We should be excited, happy. Like this is playoff basketball. Like it's happening. I was 50-50 on if we'd win or not, but like I thought it'd be close. And so from tip off, you could just kind of tell. Like, I don't know if it was that way for you too, but almost immediately I was like, we're losing this game. And I didn't quite understand the extent until, I don't know, maybe like halfway through the second quarter was when it really realized like, this is going to be bad and we're not coming back from it.
Yeah.
But the like unease in the stadium was very bizarre.
There was not a lot of like energy. I think that might be something.
Yeah. Elevating. And yeah. to the point where, I mean, the booing, I don't know how audible it was on TV. I'm sure a little, but the booing at the end of the half was, like vitriol. I mean, there was vitriol in those boos. I booed. I mean, I'll lay right down and say it. I was not happy.
Yeah.
I think by the end of the third quarter, I'd gone through every stage of grief, which was helpful, actually, if they were going to do it. I guess I kind of appreciate that they did it so spectacularly bad because I kind of accepted it before I even left.
Yeah, me too. Before the buzzer, I was already, yeah.
In the sense of just like, because I've never left a game early. I'll stay until the bitter end for anything. And like, you know, when Boban came in, we cheered. When my favorite moment of the game, and I think I mean this genuinely, was when Elfrid Payton came in for the first time in like, I don't know, 15 games, 20, I don't know, and immediately got a technical for talking crap. I was hysterically laughing.
It was the bow was on the top of the entire thing. It was just...
Exactly. It was like, this is where we're at. It was awkward. It was sad. It was beyond frustrating. There's not even a word.
Yeah.
And I felt really angry. I mean, you know, in the real world, like, it's just a game and it's fine. Like, my life is fine. But in the terms of watching a basketball game and caring about it, I was furious.
I felt really angry
at each individual player. And, like, I don't know. I texted my brother, I think, and said, like, I literally hate them right now. And then, of course, like, I don't, and that's fine. But in that moment, I don't know. It was so stark because I loved them more than anything this entire season. It was like the happiest year of my entire life going to every game this season. And then it ended like that.
Let me ask you this, because this is something, and I do want to use this as a little bit of like, we're 1 week out. I kind of want to, on this show, use this to kind of close the book on dwelling on the end of the season. So
yeah.
I think this is a question worth asking, though. How much, like, I'm sure it's different because of the stage of your life and the fact that you had tickets and everything else, but, like, comparing it to some of those heartbreaking ends during the Nash years, I've been wondering, like, how will we remember this one versus those? I just think the expectations were so high that it might, like, beat out most of those. Because every year in the Nash seasons, you had an excuse. The first year, it was like, well, Nash just got here. The second year, it was, well, Amare's hurt. Then it was, okay, well, all the players got suspended during the, you know, Spurs thing. Then the next year, it was, well, they traded Marion for Shaq. And then by 2010, it was like, okay, well, we weren't really supposed to be here anyway. This one, it was like, there's not a thing. There's no, like, oh, well, that. They just fell apart.
I agree, because to me, okay, Chris Paul was hiding an injury. It seems, I don't know if we have like full confirmation on that, but okay, there's that. Book's hamstring in round one, whatever, not really applicable. And then other than that, it's like, it's not, there's not like a good excuse.
Yeah.
And none of those to me are a good enough excuse. When you think about the fact that we thrived so well without Chris Paul for like, what, 15 games mm-hmm. in the regular season, and it was fine. So there is no reason that like we couldn't do it. Because I was thinking about that, and I vividly remember the Ron Artest tip-in in the Western Conference Finals and going upstairs and sobbing in the shower, like hysterically. Like I think I ended up on the floor. But after this game, like, I cried for sure. I'm not going to say I didn't cry. But, like, I woke up the next morning and I was like, man, what?
Yeah.
It's so different. And there isn't an excuse. And I think mm-hmm. in that sense, it's the greatest, I don't know, it's like a harsh word, but failure?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's fair because, again, there's not an easy answer. It was so bad. It was like record-breakingly bad for the entire, like, I mean, we all know all this stuff by now. So it's like, it's not as tidy as it could have been. If they like made it to the conference finals and lost to the Warriors, I don't feel like I would have been that surprised, all things considered, especially with how each team was looking. Like, even if the Suns have won game seven, I don't know how many of my listeners have been listening or watching the Western Conference finals, but the Warriors look like a machine right now. I'm not sure if the version of the Suns we were seeing would have had much of a chance in that series anyway. If that's how it would have played out, though, I think it would have been like, okay, they ran into a better team. Stuff happens. It's fine.
Yeah.
This
feels different. I maintain we're the better team than the Mavericks, without a doubt. I mean, I'll go on and say that right now. But I watched the game the other night, and the Warriors were like going so fast, and like you said, a machine. And I thought to myself, this would be awful if it was us.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know if I would have said that in February or January.
Mm-hmm.
I would have said we had it. So
yeah,
it was just an utter collapse. And I don't know. I guess I'm still kind of just waiting. I don't know if there is a concrete answer, but
it feels like
I'm kind of just waiting for someone to say something that like unlocks the key and threads it all together.
It definitely feels like there's another shoe to drop, and I don't necessarily mean that like there will be one, but that's the feeling, is like, can someone explain this? And that's actually what I was thinking about when you were saying kind of what you were going through at the end of the game, and you were telling me before we recorded about some of the other fan reaction, just disbelief more than anything. And I was actually, obviously there was no reason to stick around and watch the end of the game, so I went down to as close to the outside of the Suns locker room as we're really allowed to get at this point, which is not very, but like down a hallway. So once the players filed through, I was at least going to be able to see them. And I'm like, by no means am I saying this to say like, I'm the arbiter of how people should react to failure. I'm not saying that anyone was right or wrong, but campaign was like the first guy through and like slammed his hand against the door to the locker room, not Diana Taurasi levels, if people remember punching the door in Chicago like she did, but still, like, frustrated. And then everybody else, it was, like, the same thing I think every person in that building was experiencing, which was just, like, disbelief. Like, Mikal Bridges was kind of just, like, shaking his head back and forth, kind of, like, what is even going on? A lot of the veterans, I think, were just sort of, like, and maybe a lot of them have experienced something like that before, but it wasn't, like, outright anger. And then in the post-game press conferences and whatnot, it was the same type of thing where it was just like, you know, we'll be back, we'll be better, things happen. And then obviously you hear about the, you know, the Ayton thing and whatever. If there was something with Chris Paul and Monty, I still don't necessarily know exactly what that looked like or how much of it I fully am, you know, panicked about. But it just feels like something flipped inside of them that made them accept it almost. And it's so strange because that's just not the team that we saw that just turned it on in an instant, like every single fourth quarter all season. And now all of a sudden they're the team that is just sort of like accepting their fate. It was just, it's so strange. And it still feels strange because nobody's really come out and changed that narrative or anything.
I think that's why it's been so hard to wrap my head around. Like, I'm through the acceptance of that it happened and that life goes on, but I still can't wrap my head around the reactions. And again, like you said, I'm not here to say how any grown man should act about anything, especially when, like, I can't even dribble a basketball. But it is weird that you could just feel that something was different. That it wasn't the same as it had been all season. And honestly, I kind of felt that from the start of the playoffs. It never felt like the same team as soon as the playoffs started. I mean, we took the Pelican series and that was fine and everything. And, oh, they were better than we expected and it was harder than we thought, whatever. But I don't know, just like so much of the fun was gone by the time the playoffs came around. And I don't know why or what that is or if that was just me, but it just wasn't that fun to watch the playoffs this year.
No, I think I heard David on the Timeline episode that went up this weekend talking about he feels like the Booker injury was kind of the catalyst for it, where since that point they kind of lost their charm or the joy, or it just became hard and they never kind of clicked back into place. I think that's fair. I mean, if you freeze things right then at halftime of that game after Book scores 31 and, you know, fist bumps the baby and you're like, here's a championship, you know? And I do think it's like, that's kind of the point where things really turn. But I also agree with you where once Booker came back and looked good in the first two games, was incredible in game five, it's hard for me to go out and say like the injury itself or like his physical shape was the problem. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll hear more as the season goes along. I mean, what the Suns choose to do with the roster will obviously have a big part in how we assume things went behind the scenes. If they go out and trade DeAndre Ayton, it'll be like, okay, well, what we saw was probably real. Especially if they moved on from Chris Paul, I think we would feel even more surprised and it would tell us a lot. But let's close things out by playing staying or leaving. I played this with Aaron Edwards on Friday's show. I just think it's kind of fun because I think it kind of shows how much things are up in the air right now. I don't have Devin Booker or Mikal Bridges on this list, but I have pretty much every other core player. So let's go through it and basically just rapid fire. And this is what you want to happen, although if what you want and what you think are different, then feel free to say that too. But let's start with campaign, staying or leaving.
I think he's going to stay, but I kind of hope leave.
Okay.
Sue me.
I think I don't know how you can go back into next season with him in the same role. So if he stays, he might get knocked down a few pegs, but I don't know.
It has to go down a few pegs. God, Chris Paul needs more rest. Yeah. That's my statement on that. He needs less minutes, and campaign can't do that at his current level.
Absolutely. Chris Paul, staying or leaving?
Staying. Yeah. And anybody who's out there burning jerseys or saying otherwise, come find me and we'll have a chat.
Jay Crowder.
Leaving?
I think so too. I actually, the beginning of this podcast is I'm kind of doing a breakdown of like the final big question that I hadn't really gotten to last week, which is Cam Johnson and his extension and everything. And it just feels like things are setting up for that sort of passing of the torch. And you know, from a contract standpoint and all that stuff, Crowder's the guy that might have to fall on the sword a little bit. It does suck, though. Like, he is a guy who just can't seem to stick on a team, and he just has fit so well here. It's just a bummer. Like,
I love Jay. Love is
he's
love.
He's playing, like, Bob half the NBA team.
I love Jay.
Yeah, it's a bummer. But I think you might be right. If they're going to make any sort of trade, it feels like it kind of has to include him. So, DeAndre Ayton, staying or leaving?
I kind of think my gut says staying, unless there's something that we don't know about yet. But I mean, at least staying to start the season. I don't think he's gone in the offseason.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I just think if he wants to get paid a lot of money and the Suns want to keep being good, it's hard to imagine that that's not the solution. But if you were asking me if I'm betting that he'll be here for the whole 5 years or 4 years of his new contract, I think that's a very different conversation. But
yeah,
Cam Johnson, staying or leaving?
Cam Johnson, staying.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it would have to be like a completely unforeseen, incredible opportunity.
It's like Kevin Durant is coming. Exactly. And they want Cam Johnson.
Exactly. It has to be like a star or superstar level guy for you to get rid of him. All right, Landry Shamet, last one.
I mean, if you'd asked me this 5 days ago, I would have said leaving. But then in Monty's press conference, when they asked him, like, who are you, like, in young player developments, and he listed Landry, I was like, all right, if that's where we're going with this. I mean, I like Landry. I would have said leaving a few days ago, but based on that, I would say staying. And I guess if it's what I want, I'd love to see him get good in the rotation in the role that he's made for.
Yeah.
That sounded mean. That's not what I meant. But
you did finish your sentence and you hedged. Yes.
No. I'd like to see him stay if it can do what we've seen him do.
Yeah.
That's another conversation, though.
Yeah, I think I probably lean toward leaving, but one thing I didn't say when we did this on Friday is I think the thing about Landry that's interesting is that, well, first, Monty specifically pointed toward confidence as a thing that he wants to do a better job of instilling in the players, so that in a situation where Booker's getting taken out and Chris Paul may or may not have an injury, that guys feel comfortable stepping up. And if you're looking at anybody in the rotation who would benefit from that, I think it's probably Landry. Like I was saying, Jay Crowder has played for a lot of teams. Landry's played on basically a new team every season, and he's only been in the league 4 years. So, you know, he would probably really benefit from just getting to stay in one place, build on what he did this year. Like, if you can get the Landry that we saw in game 5 and go from there, I think you feel pretty good that he's a rotation player for you. And we know Monty loves him. But again, contract-wise, he's one of the guys that, you know, if you're building up salaries, he's the easy sort of person to pick out. Yeah. I don't know.
And I'm fine with that. I mean, if that's what has to happen, I mean, that's business, but...
Yeah. All right, any parting thoughts here as we close our book on the miraculous and then very disappointing and sad 2021-22 Suns season here?
I mean, yeah, it sucked, right? I can't believe we're doing this. I just said I've accepted it, but there are still moments where it's like, I can't believe I'm not turning on a Suns game. I can't believe it ended this way, if it had to end at all. That being said, I mean, the regular season did still happen, and it was still amazing. I don't think we need to be doom and gloom all summer just about this. I mean, definitely does it stain the season in our memories? Absolutely. Every time I go back and think about a positive memory, somehow Game 7 pushes its way in. But I mean, it was honestly one of the most fun years of my life. Whether you were actually getting to go to the games or just watching on TV or listening on the radio even, what a blast. I've never seen anything like it. I've never had that much fun. Honestly, I'll say even during the Nash years, I've never had that much fun. I've never had so much confidence in a team. It was unbelievable going into a fourth quarter down 10 and being like, we're going to win this game. And then
seriously,
we would. It was so much fun, and I loved every second of it. And that doesn't get erased by this. For me, if it does for somebody else, I guess whatever. But I don't know. It was still amazing in its own right. And ultimately, it's a failure. We didn't win a championship, even though that all happened. But it did still happen, and it was amazing. So that's my parting thought.
I think that's well put. Last year after the finals, I let people call into a Google voicemail line and share their thoughts. But that was before it was a video medium. So I was like, how do I? And I think that was a perfect way to do that. And I think we can maybe do more of these, because it's, look, I hold myself to a certain standard of not getting sappy and leading in. But I grew up here. People understand that I have a certain amount of connection, even if I do try to disengage from it. So I think it was nice to have that parting thought. You're not going anywhere. You're going to keep going to games. So I guess that proves, if anything else, that you still have faith here. But it's going to be a lot of change. So closing that book, we're starting off season. The show's not going anywhere, guys. So hit subscribe, hit follow wherever you listen, wherever you're watching. If you're finding us on YouTube, hit subscribe there. Comment below. Tell me what you think the Suns should do with Cam Johnson, or your thoughts on the offseason as a whole. We have a long way to go, but I'm not going anywhere. So thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Monday. Now go make Locked On NBA your second listen to catch up on everything else going on around the league.